Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And you can find everything about this program at wethepeopleradio.us. It's an important location because there are 10 years of archives there for you on tons of different topics. We've obviously, they're all there listed in order, but we're trying to do little groupings and make it a little easier for you to do some searching on the site. So we've done a bunch of shows on veterans issues, South Africa, China. We're doing another show on China today for you, environmentalism, marijuana, stuff like that. So trying to group those for you at the top of the page to make your search easier. But if you know somebody out there who has great information that the public needs to hear, we would appreciate you giving us a call or sending us an email. That information is all online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well done.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was that?
That was
the microphone adjuster.
Yeah, that was my
So we not a lot of goofing off today because today is a part two. Not that we goofed off that much last week, but it's a big topic. The title of the article that caught my eye a while back was "Can Chinafornia Ever Be California Again?" And as I read, it's a long article. It's very good. And the title part way down the page here is, now that the Chinese Communist Party, you'll hear about that a lot today, the Chinese Communist Party, it'll be referred to as the CCP. So as you hear CCP, it's Chinese Communist Party, has used its united front work. And I know that's the thing we didn't even get to last week. There's a lot behind this. I was just talking off air with our guest, Dr. Chen, and he was saying that there's a wonderful article by Nikki Haley that I'm in the process of posting for you. It'll be online here in just a second if you want to refresh your page. And he was saying that there was really good information in there. However, it lacked some of the background that needed to go with it, but the ideas were good. So he's gonna give us a little info about that. Dr. Chen has been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He's founded, co-founded, or been spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. He was born in China in 1962. At the age of 15, he entered a gifted program at China University of Science and Technology, and he came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and receive his Ph.D. in molecular biology, which will not be discussed today, I should point out, at the University of California, San Diego.
Oh, I'm sad.
Since a conversation with us about molecular biology would be really short. He currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. So he's a well-rounded guy with tons of information and graciously agreed to come on and do a part two for us. So while I'm posting Nikki Haley's article, let's go directly to you, Dr. Chen. Give us a little setup for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the kind introduction. After last week's show, I thought of one of Bill's questions, and I need to make elaborate on that a little bit more. That's
sure.
The sparing of China from the collapse of the communist bloc, in East Europe. And Bill asked me, why is that? And afterwards, I thought about it. In fact, basically the agreement or the promise of not doing anything from the U.S. by the older Bush, the Bush senior president, played an important role because he basically gave Deng Xiaoping the assurance that the U.S. would not intervene, and hence the June 4th massacre. And last time I mentioned this declassification of that part of the history. And so, you know, that unfortunately, a U.S. person played an important role in helping the communist China to stay being communist under communist regime. And so that I should point that out.
Do we mean to help them, or are we just being dummies? I mean, never discount the power of not knowing what you're doing.
We certainly don't mean to help them.
Okay.
But the multiple factors, but mostly selfishness, what I mentioned is greed, played a lot into it. And the reason I think Nikki Haley, who was our ambassador to the United Nations, many should know, that the reason that I really like her article is that the article formally, you know, being where she has been, being what she represented, this is formally represents, I think, high officials of America or U.S. realizing, comprehensively realizing the threat of CCP. But I'm stunned to think that there is not enough or any study, in-depth study, how China or CCP has risen up in the past 30 years. And this article, Nikki's article, talk about China's, you know, rising as a major theme of that past 30 years. But how? And there's very little study into it, if any. And one particular paragraph that I want to quote here of this article, Nikki's article, is she said, one principle that guides U.S. foreign policy is that countries should respect what belongs to other countries. After World War II, the United States provided aid to rebuild Germany and Japan. We did not steal the resources of either country. More recently, when we led the coalition that overthrew Saddam Hussein, we spent great sums to help rebuild Iraq. We didn't steal a drop of its oil. However, when it comes to China, unfortunately, I don't think America can make that claim. Now, the U.S. did not actively steal. So our policymakers did not realize, or in their mind, we did not steal. However, with what I talk about, the generous barbarism, when China hand larger sum of what the CCP has stolen from China, or from Chinese people, when the CCP hand that actively, you know, voluntarily handed that to the U.S., when the U.S. accept that, the U.S. unwittingly stole that. And so I don't think many people or any has really come to a clear understanding of that. And that is, to me, that is the fundamental reason why the U.S. has played this unwitting role to, you know, what I mentioned last time, a Chinese saying, raise a tiger to be a threat. And yes, U.S. raised the CCP to be U.S.'s own threat. And this whole thing, the U.S. has done it unwittingly. But that is because our greed has been, you know, induced and taken advantage of by the CCP.
Yeah, we look at China as a great trading partner and a great opportunity to make a lot of money for, you know, industry and big corporations.
Goods and services,
overlook.
Come out of China.
It's too much
money. You know, a lot cheaper. And
a lot of money at play.
How's that working out? We went into that last week, so we won't redo all of last week's show, but really and truly, I hope you will go back and listen. Just for reference, we're airing on the 28th of July here in 2019, so that would be under the 21st of July, 2019, obviously. Since we are not allowed to time travel, even with Dr. Chen, what a drag. We need to have somebody on who knows how to do that, and they could help us with that. That's what we need to add to our repertoire, time travel. I'll be afraid. So we'll be right back in 2 minutes. We'll take a little break for capitalism here. You're listening to We the People. About the theme for the whole show. I do hope people will go back and check out the information from last week, because honestly, we do look at China. We know that they take our technology and replicate it. I don't think we think about how the goods come back for so much less money and what's happening to the actual people there, but we're fueling.
We're fueling China's growth.
Fueling their growth, which seems like, well, hey, we all grow together. Rising tide lifts all ships. But,
at what cost?
Yeah. So anyway, back to you, Dr. Chen.
Yeah. So last time you asked about the United Front work.
Yes.
Yes.
And this is probably not so easy to... for people with principle to understand, but for people who has been there and live under that, I came from China, and we all understand what it truly is. This is all about deception. I mean, we Chinese, we all know about it. This is all about deception. Friendship that was, supposedly construed, but the friendship all changes with different needs at different times. So, on the surface, the United Framework says to unite all forces that can be united, all forces that can be united to fight the main enemy. Now, by itself, it already told anybody to be united. The CCP, I must say, the CCP is, quite upfront that it says, we'll unite you to fight the main enemy. Well, once the main enemy is conquered, what will be next? There will be next enemy, main enemy, right? And there will be next main enemy. There's next main enemy. There's no bottom line. It's all based on, what is needed at a time. Who's our main enemy? And once that is killed off, we go on to the next, right? And so, for example, social study, international study, we all know that people now understand that democratic countries are not easily going to war. And that's, you know, how we understand the modern peace. There are so many democratic countries. They don't go into war against each other, or at least they don't usually go into war against each other. That's because they have a bottom line. They share something in common, principled foreign policies. This thing doesn't exist, in, you know, with communism. It just united work. You know, it's worse with CCP, but it's with other communist regime as well. That all this alliance are temporary, based on the need, moments need. Once the need change, friendship changes. So you cannot counter anything. So that's why the, you know, communist country going to war against each other, you know, more frequently than any other kind of country. They, you know, we can look at a communist country, their history, right? China was at war with, with Russia, with Vietnam. You know, Russia invaded Czechoslovakia. There's all this kind of history. So there's no bottom line. And unfortunately, for people with bottom line, they tend to think, the communist country might have that as well. So they form alliance with them and get burned. First alliance, the U.S. with the CCP is by Nixon in the need to fight a Soviet or isolate Soviet. And that gave the CCP a leash of life in the 1970s. And even though I don't think that's particularly wrong at that time, but it's just that we forgot. U.S., America forgot that the CCP did not have bottom line. And that is what has caused the problem with China. See, this country, to me, America is a country different than any other country, that it was not formed on cultural, ethnic, or historical, or geological background. It was not found in any of those, like any other country. This country is found on an idea. And so this country has its national ideal. And this national ideal is American exceptionalism. Except we have to remember what this country is exceptional in. In what aspects we're exceptional. I myself came from China. It was from understand a part of this history, America's history, the Amistad. When I watched the Amistad movie, I looked up that part of the history. And it's that part of history that made me to embrace the concept of America, exceptionalism. So this ship carried itself in 1839 to the United States and touched off a historical legal battle, then went up to the Supreme Court. And risking America's contemporary national interests, their alliance with mighty Spain, Americans who didn't even know where those people came from, they choose to defend them. Those are complete strangers. They have to hire a language professor to find out where they came from, right?
And that's
so
true.
It's that part of history that made me to understand Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and the Civil War. The Noble War really fought for the principle, for a principle, and for those who could not fend for themselves. And so I came to enlightenment that it was the defense of this principle, that the principle that America was founded on, that justified America's own long endurance. So when America, as long as America stay with this national ideal, then it will be strong. When America, you know, deviated from that principle, you'll be weak. And so that's an American exceptionalism. Any other country can make its national policies or international policy, whatever policy, based on interests, not America. As soon as America does that, it will be weakened, because America is found on a principle. It's under God's watch. And so if we forgot that, we will be weaker. Now, finally, after this 30 years, some America began to look at the CCP more seriously. Yet so far, even with Nikki Haley's wonderful article, we're still looking at the phenomena, the symptom. We haven't looked into its root. And there's, if we look at back for the past 30 years, this 30 years is surprisingly quiet compared to other parts of history. This particular 30 years is particularly peaceful, quiet. There's not much going on. There's only just so few things going on. But there's one constant theme throughout the past 30 years. And we missed it. The world missed it. And certainly, China's rise is part of it. But behind that, there's one theme that is China's constant suppression of its, or the CCP's constant exploitation and suppression of its population.
See, and I don't think people, I really don't think Americans understand that. And Americans, and as we spoke about last week, even Americans who go to China, they see what the Chinese government organizes for them to see. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't get to see what's really. They don't get to have conversations like you would here. I mean,
if jump in a car and just go drive through the country and
check stuff out. Landed here. You go to a grocery store and you know it's like, hey, are you from here? Do you like it here? I mean, people could actually tell you what they think, but that's mm-hmm. not something that's going on over there. And I'm not sure, you know. I think part of the problem is we can't comprehend that. We really have no idea what that means. We can talk about it, but unless you've lived that way, I don't think we have a clue. We have to take a really quick break again, and we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Chen. We are talking about the Chinese Communist Party and then its influence on America and kind of how we interact that way. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Young people speak in their minds. Are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Warrior strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. Better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going.
Hit it, Bill. You said you had something when we came back. You're just like
I wasn't
just
prepared.
Looking at the microphone.
The Art of War by Sun Tzu, one of the quotes is, the supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. Right. And that really says a lot about what's going on today with China.
Right.
Yeah, they read the book, too. Oh, yeah, yeah, they wrote the book.
They wrote the book.
We read the book later, and then we thought it was great, great ideas.
Yeah, it's great fiction.
We forgot somebody was actually doing it.
Right.
Dr. Chen, when you see all this going on, I mean, it's got to be kind of frustrating.
Well, I myself got to know it slowly. When I first came to this country, I came with all this communist education, indoctrination, right? And one advantage is that I know the system better than others, but that doesn't explain all. You mentioned that America's didn't know what's going on in China. They go to China and see what the government let them to see. But there are people who know more. And I think it's a proper place we talk about the media's role in all this.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Yeah, because it isn't everybody. I just mean, people who go there as tourists or that kind of thing. I mean, their experience is very, very controlled, which is just not something I think our government could pull off here. follow someone on vacation and control everyone they meet.
Unfortunately, that control starts in the United States, even before America went to China to take a trip. They are already under the control, and that is by our media. America, our government really is the three branches government, check and balance, plus the media.
Correct. That's the idea, media. Anyway.
Yeah. The media, really, to me, the media cannot be treated as any business. Media should not be any business because it carries public trust. Anything that carries public trust, it cannot be just any business. Just like government, can government be allowed to make money for its owner? It cannot. Yet, America's, I don't know when, but it's probably over time that America's media slowly degrade into pure business. When the media becomes business, there's major consequence. That is, news now becomes product.
Mm-hmm.
When news is a product, then the company can choose what product to sell.
And who to market to, yeah.
Right. And the news that's not good for for the company's bottom line and top line, it will suppress that product. Well, that product is news. Then we no longer get truthful news. And that is why a particular media now is gaining more and more trust. That is, you probably heard about it, the Epoch Times.
Epoch Times is awesome. We've had one of their writers on before. They're in our list of shows on China. They do a wonderful job and really a wide variety of stories.
Mm-hmm. And the reason is that the journalists in Epoch Times, most of them are Falun Gong practitioners, a group that has withstood China's 20 years of persecution.
I did not know.
And that itself, China's persecution of Falun Gong has been suppressed by American media. Major suppression. I'm not talking about, suppressed. It's a systematic suppression. And so America's media played a major role in this. And now we see, the first victims are Chinese people, human rights victims. But now Americans, they themselves become victims of this manipulated media. They probably don't realize yet because media is still being manipulated. But once more and more America realize how, some of the, particularly the liberal media has been reporting false, what President Trump called fake news, That will be the time, you know, that those media would be bankrupt.
That only will be true if the media doesn't have the government, or the government doesn't have the media in its pocket. With the fake news that right now they've got a lot of the government behind them, and they can say whatever they want and put it out as truth. If the government doesn't allow fake news, I don't think you'll see it happen. But you're right. It's a product, and if that product is allowed to be manipulated and put out there, we're all going to suffer.
Yeah. I think America needs to do a deep soul-searching and relook, you know, the past whatever number of years that, you know, how we got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But the degradation of media integrity is certainly one of them.
Your media in China is totally controlled by the government, isn't it?
Yes. And that China's has exported that kind of control to America.
Mm-hmm.
CCP has bought up a lot of media here.
Right.
Most of the Chinese media has been bought.
Wow.
And then China has bought into Hollywood. I mean, when we talk about Chinafornia, we cannot omit China's influence in Hollywood. Hollywood used to be a strong frontline resisting China's influence. The Hollywood prides itself for its freedom of expression.
Oh yeah, they were patriots. I mean, look at you go back into the 40s and 50s where they did a lot of movies that were very patriotic and
mm-hmm.
you know, they had their blacklist back in the day to root out communism, and
mm-hmm.
now look at it.
Mm-hmm. And now they are exercising self-censorship because they covet China's market, and because China invests in Hollywood. And so Hollywood is a proud Jew of America. Now that is very much tainted. And that's in California. If we talk about Chinafornia, we cannot, you know, avoid talking about Hollywood.
Hmm.
And I don't think...
Well, look at how many of the...
Yeah.
I was just going to say, look at how many of these people in Hollywood think that they're the media. I mean, those lines have become really, really blurred.
Here are these actors
who play someone, you know, some character, and then they think they can lecture us on... I mean, you name it, morality, guns, immigration, you know, who to elect for a president, what racism means.
Yeah, if they like him as an actor, they must be good people, and they would never lie to us.
Well, they must be experts. It's
experts.
Like, wait a second. All they're doing is reading lines, and yeah, anyway. But
yeah.
It's bad when your media and your entertainment industry all become the same thing.
Yeah. And so... media certainly played a major role in preventing Americans to know the truth about China, to know the truth about America's relationship with China, and to know the truth about American company and American politicians dealing with China. And as a result, they don't know what's going on. And in particular, I mentioned a constant theme for the past 28 years is the CCP's persecution of Falun Gong. As bad as it is, I mean, that Nikki Haley's article, I recommend it because it really reflects a comprehensive change of view of American high officials, their view on China. So it gave a comprehensive view of, you know, how that had changed. But as bad as it is, if it is not for Falun Gong, it would have been so much worse, because China, for all these years, past 20 years, spent a major portion of its national resources in persecuting this group, 100 million of Falun Gong practitioners.
How many of them?
100 million. There's 100 million Falun Gong practitioners in China.
100 million Falun Gong.
Yeah. Right.
I know, and the show we did on organ harvesting, they were the top, you know,
donors.
They were the top participants in that.
All right, we better take a break real quick. 2 minutes.
2 minutes to celebrate a little capitalism. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Chen. We are talking about China for the second week in a row. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Bill's over here scouting out Sun Tzu. He had a scary another scary Sun Tzu quote for us.
Scary Sun Tzu quote. Let your plans be dark and impenetrable as night, and when you move, fall like a thunderbolt. Ouch. I'm afraid.
I mean, honestly, I think anybody who's ever read Sun Tzu knows that that's quite the playbook, but I'm not sure we fully comprehend where it all started.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth revisiting. I just wanted to let people know too, the Epoch Times, I included a link for you on today's page. So if you go to the July 28th, 2019 page at wethepeopleradio.us, I keep adding things as we go. And I'm going to get Dr. Chen to send me the rest of the article on Nikki Haley, and I'll post that too for those of us who don't have subscriptions to foreignaffairs.com and we want to read the rest of the article. So we'll get that up for you too.
I think another thing people don't really comprehend is the size of China, the population of China.
Yeah, the volume of China.
Yeah, I mean, we as a nation are somewhere around 300 million people, a little over 300 million people. China is well over a billion.
And 5 times of that, 1.5 billion.
5 billion, yeah. So, I mean,
1.5 billion.
As opposed to, what, 320 million in our country. I mean, it is.
Who knows now? The southern border's kind of changing the number as we go. Yeah. Sorry, different topic.
Yeah, different topic. It's China should not be trifled with. And I think that's exactly what we're doing, is we think we are taking advantage of China, when in fact I think China is taking advantage of us. And I think our government really needs to wake up and realize they don't need our help to develop their economy.
Well, like,
they're doing just fine.
Some of the things, Dr. Chen, that you listed in that article on methods that the Chinese Communist Party or the CCP uses, recruitment of business leaders who have strong economic interests in China, it's like, check. Mm-hmm. Leveraging trade and investment dependence to coerce partners, check.
Mm-hmm.
Substantial financial and other assistance to key individuals and institutions that are prepared to support China's interests. That's a big deal.
Yes.
And so can you speak a little bit to that with the university system? Just because that's just so important. I know we touched it last week, but.
Well, the university system, okay. If China, let me put it this way. if the CCP can get a Chinese to do what it can in the U.S., it will look to have its Chinese, national to do it before it go on to American or non-Chinese. So in the university, a lot of the CCP is doing is through Chinese professors, Chinese students. And so in that aspect, we have done, we know even less. Right? Last time I mentioned the 1,000 talent program, a lot of those people who are in that program are compromised by the CCP. They're recruited to legally steal from U.S. And then another way, an excellent article, but that's many years ago. I will forward it. I'll send an article to you also. There's very well, probably the best known, at least best, most famous scholar on Chinese study is Perry Link. He once wrote an article titled "The Anaconda," basically a big snake in the chandelier. It described China's control of intellectuals, even the threat of scholars in the United States. Many of the Chinese study scholars depend on their access to China for their career.
Oh.
They spend their, tremendous amount of resources to get their degree to learn the Chinese. And if they're cut off from China's information or access to China, their career will be over. And so China did that to him and did that to a lot of Chinese scholars, Western and non-Chinese scholars, to suppress their study. And so their China study has been, by itself, the China study has been manipulated or biased, because there's this major power watching over you, like Perry Link in the article says, hiding in the chandelier. I mean, even at your home, you don't feel safe because someone is watching you. And so there's very little fear Chinese or impartial Chinese studies. And those in favor of China will get China's support in various forms, their access to China. And so that also manipulated America's perception of China, because these are from their scholars, supposed to be impartial.
Sure, sure. You would think, yeah, these are, and the other, the other little piece of this article, because we spoke about it last week, the charm offensive. And I thought this part was very, very telling, because we're looking at it. We just don't know what we're seeing. So the charm offensive is achieved by a variety of methods, including cooperation, co-option, and coercion, and making the price of collaboration irresistible, thus slowly absorbing the party's enemies into its ranks. So when it comes to mm-hmm. entrepreneurs, so you move over to the business sector, the carrots dangled include sought-after positions in government advisory bodies like the Chinese People's Political Consultative Congress, that's CPPCC, which imply insider access, if not actual power. Success of this strategy can be seen from a single statistic. Okay, hope everyone's sitting down. The CPPCC now contains 59, that's 5-9, U.S. dollar billionaires whose combined net worth double the GDP of Ireland.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
Personal influence.
So it isn't just your intellectuals. It isn't just your military people. It isn't just your tech folks, you know, swiping secrets and military applications. I mean, let's bring the business leaders in. Hey, there's something in here for you, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a business here in our little town that trains Chinese pilots to fly jets. And we've come across these folks many times in our community. Very polite. I mean, they're very quiet. And I'm sure they're...
I will say, however, Dr. Chen, we don't live in a really... we live in a fairly monochromatic area up here at the northern end of California. And the one day we were in the grocery store, it was fairly late at night, and it turned out the Chinese pilots were doing their grocery shopping that night.
Yeah, that was...
Seriously, cool. Bill and I were the only people in the store who weren't Chinese. It's like, did something happen that we don't know about?
Did they land? Yeah, but you know, when you think about that, I mean, that's a little bit scary. I guess they have to get their training somewhere, but... Again, this is an American company that was probably offered a very lucrative contract to train young pilots to fly and then go back to China and you know,
yeah,
go to their airlines and their military or whatever. But yeah, you're going to see it in every industry where our business leaders are involved with the Chinese people.
Yeah, let me give you an example of, you know, China-fornia version of that. People have asked me, so, I mean, when you talk about this, what's its harm? So what? What's its harm? Well, the largest retirement fund of California has hired a Chinese high official who used to work in Chinese finance department as its chief officer.
Wow.
That's cited in the California article.
That would more than likely be CalPERS.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. It is the CalPERS. Right?
Bill gets a gold star. Good job, Bill.
Look, think about it. Think about the conflict of interest.
Yeah.
The potential conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I think people don't realize. It's not so much the selection of this particular person, but rather the failure of the system of not detecting that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the eventual
we kind of stick at detecting threats,
consequences of that, yeah,
at that type of threat.
No,
well, that's a live example of United Front work, right?
Yeah,
just
no
a
kidding.
Little bit here, a little bit there, and just slowly move along. We've got
a hard break here for the news, and then we're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Chen, because he is our hostage for the entire program today. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And you can find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. The archives are free of charge. Each show has its own page with all the information about our guest and the things we talked about and links and good stuff like that. And you are just absolutely encouraged and free to send those to friends, family, whoever might be interested in these topics. We try to do things that typically wind up covered in, well, they're probably not covered at all, or they're covered in like 2 minutes. You know, the old news shows where they have the panel of guests and they're all a bunch of experts and they're all on for 14 seconds each and no one learns anything. So our goal is to bring you the rest of the story, sort of where Paul Harvey left off, I guess, without the snazzy endings. But today we're talking about China. We started with this... actually, I think in November was our first show about China. And so it's sort of leading from one thing to the next. And it's something that's very much in the news, But the parts that are not in the news are the parts we're going to cover, because they are things that we should consider. Other countries, I mean, if you don't live in the United States, you ought to consider it too. China is becoming a world power, and you should know what you're looking at and how they're affecting perhaps coming for your country, your business, your mm-hmm. citizens. And if you're someone who travels to China or works with China, these are things that if you haven't considered them before, you really ought to. So our guest today is Dr. Chen. And Dr. Chen, I've got to scroll up, darn it. I was at a spot in the article on our page that I wanted to ask him about. But he's been working on projects concerning China for over 30 years and became an activist in 1989 when he helped organize supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. He was outraged by the June 4th massacre and founded the Tiananmen Square Foundation. He has served on the board of Press Freedom Guardian and was elected the vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. So along with being a PhD in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego, and owning his own molecular biology startup in San Diego, he works on a lot of activism regarding China, and we really appreciate him spending his Sunday afternoon with us to kind of smarten us up. We've been referring to the Chinese Communist Party, which is the CCP, and you'll hear the show say that a lot. I'm always worried when we do acronyms that will have people tune out mentally because they have no idea what we're talking about. So anytime you hear CCP, that's the Chinese Communist Party, and then the United Front Work. Dr. Chen, maybe you could give people sort of a definition when they hear United Front Work. What does that really mean?
It really means that CCP unite all possible forces into one front to fight its main enemy. So United Front, right? It's an alliance. But it is an alliance based on interest rather than any principle. It's all about deception. It's all about backstabbing. It's all about once you're used, then you'll be tossed. Unfortunately, Americans do not know enough about the CCP's history. The CCP's history is filled by this kind of backstabbing all these years. And so we have little idea about United Front. And we're only seeing in the past 30 years, the generous barbarism is part of the United Front strategy. It will give you some, it'll show you some good things. So you'll be united with me. And then over time, it was like, the proverbial frog. Once you realize it's going to kill you, it's probably too late. And America, we are at this point that fortunately, with the election of President Trump, we're temporarily out of that danger. But we're far from being really out of it, because if we don't know how we got into it, we will not be able to get out of it. And certainly, United States now, like mentioned, like it is mentioned in Nikki Haley's article, that stand up to China in the economic front is the first step. Well, this article calls into stand up in other areas, military, intellectual property, all that. But there's one thing that this article did not talk about, did not realize, is to stand up to CCP in the ideological front. And that is the key. That is all this is about. And I mentioned that as bad it is, if it's not because of Falun Gong, the situation would be much worse, because China spent large amount of its resources in persecuting Falun Gong. Let me give you a statistics. I mean, this is only a part of the statistics, not even all. So China has a defense department like the U.S., right? But China, the U.S. Defense spending is the largest among all expense. In China, there's one department has larger budget than its military. This is its so-called maintaining status commission. Its budget is larger than the military. And this particular maintaining stability commission is only meant to target its own citizens. In another word, the CCP treat its own citizen worse than foreign invaders. I mean, the military would be, you know, supposedly would be towards the outside to defend the country, right? And yet CCP has a particular commission or department to defend its own people. And the budget is even larger. So China is really treat its own people as war. And most of the money for the past 20 years was spent on the persecuting Falun Gong.
And why is the, I mean, for people who don't know anything about Falun Gong, the three principles, I was just sort of looking for something that I could post that would be kind of bite-sized for people, but who would think you'd persecute people who are seeking truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance?
Right.
I mean, which one of those is the, I guess truthfulness actually is probably the problem right there. Compassion's probably also an issue, but it's a physical practice as well as a mental practice. And is this the type of thing we would see people doing like in a park? You know, where it looked like, I know Tai Chi they do sort of outside. Is Falun Gong something they do outside?
Yes. What people see outside doing exercise in a park is the physical aspect of it.
Okay.
There are much more to it than just that, because at home they study books, teaching of Falun Gong or Falun Dafa, what we call.
Right.
And the teachers write about, you know, how you cultivate yourself to be more truthful, to be kinder to people, to be more tolerant. And that's basically its teaching.
And the Chinese government's like, hey, you know what? Can't have a whole lot of this. This is a problem. Which should tell us something.
This has to go back to the nature of the CCP's ruling. I mentioned about crime against conscience. Or the concept of conscience and the CCP's crime against conscience. Well, that crime, the persecution or the crime against conscience is the very nature of CCP. Let me just give you an overall picture that throughout CCP's history, it has killed more people than any regime we can think of. It has killed more people than the two world wars combined.
Hang on for just 1 second. I don't want to break up your statistics. When we come back, I want you to reiterate those and throw some numbers on it for us. Because sure. The threat of the Chinese Communist Party, I think we have a tendency to think of it as just an idea, but actually it comes with a physical cost as well. You're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. ask Dr. Chen. Okay, so talk to us about the communist, the Chinese Communist Party. What does that toll look like besides the intellectual and emotional toll?
Right. So there are multiple studies and publications that have put together indicated that at least 80 million lives have perished under its despotic rule. That's an astounding number that people have a hard time probably grasping.
And that's over what time frame?
Past 60 years.
60 years.
Okay. So, on average, 1.5 million were killed. Think about that.
Every year.
So let me give you some simple examples. In the very first year of communist rule, a movement of quote-unquote persecution of counter-revolutionaries killed 10 million people. And the slogan at that time is, every village should hear gunshots. So 10 million people were shot to death.
Every village should hear gunshots?
Should fear.
Yeah.
Oh, should fear gunshots.
Yeah, should hear gunshots. Should hear the execution gunshot.
Ah, that's a cheerful plan.
Yeah. And the movement of suppressing counter-revolution superstition, SAC, and secret society then followed. 2 million people were killed. Right? And the land reform followed. Several million killed. And then the industrial reform came, followed. And in Shanghai, the largest city in China, the communist mayor, Chen Yi, even mocked those business owners who would jump off the building as paratroopers. And every night he would say, how many paratroopers have landed today? I mean, talking about,
the people who committed suicide.
Right. Jeez. How cruel that is. And so many know about Stalin's man-made famine in Ukraine, right? But the greatest man-made famine happened in China between 1959 and 1961. I personally know a senior government official who was in charge of China's agriculture reform in the 1980s. He told this direct to me. He said his staff had conducted internal investigation of the famine. A conservative estimate put the number of people who were starved to death at 48 million. And a more reasonable estimate put that number at 60 million.
40 to 60 million people starved to death.
Yeah. And then in the Cultural Revolution, from 1966 to 1976, that threw the whole nation into hell. And so far, no official statistics of death row toll are available. It's just one. In late 1978, then CCP Vice Chairman General Ye said the Cultural Revolution killed 20 million people. Mm-hmm. In Guangxi Province alone, one province, China, in the summer of 1968, more than 100,000 quote unquote counter-revolutionaries were cut open alive and their internal organs eaten as delicacies. So talking about brutality, talking about barbarism, and the CCP is worse than anyone. So as shocking as this number are, it's far from enough to show the monstrosity of the CCP's rule. The CCP doesn't just kill people to take their lives. It has a purpose. Many people ask me, you know, why such brutality? Well, political movement is a, even as today, is a matter of fact. I mean, it's just a way of life. The CCP can draw up any plan of, you know, political movement, and they claim, openly claim, that this movement targets a small percent of people. I mean, it says the majority of the people are good. We're only targeting a small percentage of people, 5% of people. And I actually coined the term of 90% psychology. I mean, think about it. All the people, you know, in the world, think about it. Any government, you can openly say it will persecute 5% of people. What kind of government is that? How scary that is.
It's yeah. a big number.
But that brings out the worst of human nature. People, for their own safety, would look away from what happened to the 5%. In fact, for their own safety, they do push other into that 5%, so to show the government that, you know, he's with the government, not with that 5%. That itself is a crime against conscience. Actually, gold people act against their conscience. And that is the nature of the CCP's rule. The worst part of this crime is that the more people are persecuted this way, the easier they'll commit crime against conscience. People don't understand how China has such, you know, the Chinese people have such a, they have no qualm about lying, about, you know, committing fraud, all kinds of terrible things. And again, this is back to our media. The Western media is far from, because, you know, this podcast is not good for their profit, so they're not reporting this. The situation in China, if the world people know, they will really cringe. We know a little bit about China, the food safety, the
yeah.
melting, contamination of milk,
dog food,
all the recycled cooking oil, you know, all this, and the fake medicine. And people ask, don't they have any conscience? Well, that's the result of the CCP's destruction of the nation's conscience for the past 60 years. And so China's slavery is not just a slavery of body. What I call China's modern slavery is really a slavery and manipulation and possession of people's mind, a slavery of their mind. When I talk about America profiting from China's modern slavery, I'm talking about that. You know, now, it's probably, no people know about it, okay? China are talking about 996. You probably haven't heard about this term. It's called the 996.
Like the three numbers, 996?
996, yes.
Oh, okay.
What it refers to is people working, the companies in China now require its employee to work from 9 to 9 and 6 days a week.
Hmm.
Talking about exploitation.
Yeah,
no kidding.
And that's what we're profiting from. And that's why I disagree with Mickey when he said we did not steal from other country. Well, we unwittingly are stealing from Chinese people, stealing their health, stealing their happiness, stealing with their family life. And, of course, that is done through our complacency or our acquiescence with the CCP. Chinese, inside China, China's own scholars talked about, openly talked about, but of course they're suppressed, but they at least they're talking about China's advantage of low human rights condition. But that is not talked about here. Why? Because our business, our media, do not want us to know. Because once America knows about that, once America know about that, they will not like that. They will not buy China product.
Well, I don't know. I think that erosion of conscience is in full swing in this country. I mean, the stories of what happens in the Apple plant in China was pretty common news over here, and nothing was done about it. We still buy these iPhones by the millions, and it's pretty common knowledge how they're produced and where they're produced and the conditions that exist in those plants. We've got to take a quick break.
Well, as long as we talk about how China is doing so much better, everybody thinks that means everyone in China is doing better.
Yeah, everybody. They're making money.
It's working for everyone.
It's working out well. Yeah.
We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Chen. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. That's unfortunately what it kind of comes down to. So Dr. Chen, do you have any ideas on, I mean, this is almost something that is just so big and so pervasive. That darn Sun Tzu wrote a whole book about it and gave him all the directions. How do you roll this back? I mean, is it just really you have to wake people up and I guess if people recognize it and stop supporting it? Is that
right.
possible?
It's possible, and hopefully we have covered quite a lot of material, how our government official, our business, our media, our intellectuals been manipulated into giving a rosy picture of China and then fall victim to it. And then what to roll out, and there's one final thing I have to mention before we can suggest the way out.
Sure.
And that is the, I said, as bad as it is, it could have been much worse if not for Falun Gong. And so we have to understand what Falun Gong is. What has Falun Gong done to resist that? If Falun Gong can resist that, maybe we can learn from that, right? So, Falun Gong is really a cultivation practice. Last time I mentioned that from the earliest establishment of Chinese culture, Chinese people embraced the concept of oneness of man and heaven. And the way to achieve that is cultivation. And Falun Gong is just one of such schools of cultivation practice. And it really gives people moral guidance, how they should live their lives. And this affront the CCP, because I just talk about the nature of the CCP's ruling. It rules by goading people acting against their conscience, gave away their conscience so it could be easily manipulated by the CCP. Falun Gong gave people conscience. In fact, not just Falun Gong. A lot of things anything that would help people to gain conscience or insist their conscience of persecuting China. Freedom, for example. Democracy, any idea. you know, any religion, anything that empowers people's mind are persecuted in China. But Falun Gong in particular, because there are large number of people, 100 million people practiced Falun Gong by 1999. That affronted the Chinese Communist Party, because after 50 years of brainwashing through crime against conscience, it cannot accept that there's such large number, 100 million people, and a third of the CCP's membership actually practice Falun Gong. That's what really threatened or what affronted the CCP. And that's why it launched this persecution of Falun Gong. So, in a sense, it's a religious persecution or a persecution of people's mind. Now, when we come to talk about religion or faith, we are easily, you know, think that, you know, the conflicts of different religions, right? And when we talk about conscience, when we talk about what's religion, we often get into the detail what we're believing. You know, who we believe in is God or Muhammad or whoever that is. But if we take a step back, if we really look into, think, what is common, let's not look at the difference, but look what is in common. We see one thing. Faith or belief is really humans, believe the existence of higher realm, higher way of life, and we can go there by practicing certain teaching, following certain teaching. So the belief of higher being or a higher realm and the human's ability to go there, those are the two things that's common to all, you know, orthodox teaching. Right? Of course, there's a higher realm, there's also a lower realm, the hell. Right? This is going hand in hand. And people who do not believe higher realm, they don't believe lower realm as well. So that is what I think a common in all faith. Right? And then another thing I want to talk about is the conflict of all human conflict. There are all kinds of human conflict, but to me, There are only two kinds of conflict. The kind the animal know how to do. Fight for food, fight for resources, fight for spouse. Those are what I call interest-based conflict. And then the other kind only human knows how to do. The conflict based on right and wrong, truth and false. And the greatest, the largest, gravest conflict, or some example of what I call the second kind, what I call ideological-based conflict. Religious conflict or Cold War, those are prime examples of conflict of, you know, ideology. And largest possible conflict of the second kind, ideological-based conflict, is the one we are experiencing now. The attack of anti-theist. CCP is not just atheist, it's anti-theist. It's against all belief. It's even against the, you know, the belief of the existence of hell, right? So it's anti-theist. If it happens that the CCP wins this conflict, then the whole humanity will be wiped out by our Creator because we no longer believe in our Creator.
Right.
And that is the largest possible conflict. And unfortunately, we are in that conflict.
Well, we've done so many shows previously on communism and all of the roots there. And it doesn't matter if it's the communism that comes out of, like, you know, Russia or Venezuela or pick a place. The pivot on all of it is getting rid of belief.
Getting rid of religion.
You have to stop believing in a higher power, no creator.
That's direct conflict of the forces in power.
Sure, because you have to always fill a vacuum, right? Vacuum will fill itself. So if there is no creator and nothing to believe in, then the government fills the void and
they'll tell you what to
believe. That's what they think anyway. Yeah. And we see that in places. No, when you grew up, when you were a kid, I know our friend June said that when she was mm-hmm. she was a kid, she was, a card carrying little. Believer. She was a marcher. She was the Chinese government. That's where all the good things came from. That's who was running everything, and there was no problem.
Never any reason to doubt that.
Yep, it was all good. Is that kind of how you were raised too?
Yes, very much so.
Now, were your parents? Because she said her parents knew better, because her grandparents were killed by the government, but the parents didn't want her to be in danger, so they basically allowed her to be indoctrinated and didn't tell her any different. Did your folks kind of know? Or
no, my parents didn't know, but my grandparents knew better. And this is
interesting.
I did not understand it until many years later. Before I came to the United States, both my grandparents are really well off. My mother's father was a president of a top university in China, and my father's father is the top engineer in China as well. But both of them were persecuted in China. Mother's father was persecuted in the anti-rightist movement.
The anti-what?
He was anti-rightist. It's one of the movements. I mean, no, I don't think I haven't met anybody who can count all the political movements in China.
Okay.
Yeah. So because of this movement, he was persecuted and sent to the countryside. It was a professor and president of the university, center countryside.
But the countryside isn't what we think of as the countryside. We're not talking a nice place with some sheep
and a
farm.
No. Rural, far out area. Basically, he's exiled.
You're in exile, right.
Right. And then after the Cultural Revolution, he finally came back to the city, and that was just before I came to the United States. And then he said this to me. It's chilling. And I only feel it's chilling. I understand how chill that is much later. Right? He said, I don't know why I must have done something really good in my previous life that I was, labeled as a rightist and got sent off, got exiled. Otherwise, I for sure would be beaten to death during the Cultural Revolution.
Oh.
Wow. So he looked at it as a good
blessing.
Thing.
Yeah.
He looked at it, lucked out. He was persecuted. Yeah. Yet he felt he was lucky that he was persecuted.
That is so sad. Yeah.
My gosh. All right. I'm sorry. Let's take another break again. What the heck? Whenever we talk to you, it seems like we have more breaks than usual, but we really don't. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Chen. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
was just a dream. That was just a dream. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Trying to keep up with you. And I don't know if I can do it.
But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies.
Okay.
So. You have a song for every occasion, don't you?
Well, you know, that's what I told Bill when we took the break. Because I've got this long list that I've been creating over time. And so as we're talking, I'm sort of looking at the list and I'm thinking what will fit. And I told him I kept changing when I played Losing My Religion right at the end of what you were talking about with your grandfather. I had changed that. That was the fourth change I made in my head. And so, like, just a few minutes before you told us that story, I had that song. I thought, yeah, we should do that. And I thought, so weird. I think they're picking themselves. I don't think I'm picking them at all. I think I don't have anything to do with it.
Very good.
You know, and it's very interesting because the topics in, excuse me, in these programs, our music from, like, especially the 60s and 70s, and all right, we'll go in a little bit into the early 80s with the big hair bands, but it's interesting that the music that I grew up with and Bill grew up with in our age group, this all had a ton of meaning that we didn't see as young mm-hmm. people. We had no idea what was going on in the world, and you fast forward to now and you think, there was a lot happening that we had no clue. So, your family, I mean, we can't even imagine in this country, people here can't even imagine what it would be like to, people talk about being, you know, persecuted for their thoughts.
Well,
and it's like
generational oppression.
We're nowhere.
Yeah.
We're, I mean, no one here is truly being persecuted for their thoughts, not anywhere close to that. However, if we keep going down the road we're on, it's not an impossibility. It's got to be kind of creepy for you to look at the craziness that's going on in our country these days.
Yeah.
With the backdrop of China and that you know so well.
Yeah. So we have just a few minutes, I see, our time. But
I know, we're always out of time.
Yeah. Let me quickly to say, you know, how right now we're engaged in a trade negotiate with China.
Yes.
And so America finally stood up against China economically. That's good. But I think that's not enough. For America to recover from all the damage that's done so far, we have to realize the root cause of it. And our president has to do more. And let me just name one example. Have you heard of Shen Yun?
Yes. June spoke to us about that.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful performance that is suppressed by the CCP. Shen Yun is a U.S. business. And China is to interfere with U.S. business operation worldwide. Shen Yun. Include that in the trade negotiation. Get China off that. Because Shen Yun is what China or the CCP are afraid of. And we, America, to win against the CCP, like Nikki Haley said, for U.S. to recover from California back to California, we have to stand up not just in economic, in military, but we must stand up in our true exceptionalism. We have to recover our national idealism or national ideal. We have to recover our value. And this cannot be done through just business negotiation. This has to be accomplished by standing up for the righteous to do the right thing. And only through then we can undo all the past 30 years of damage. And there's no other way to it. I don't see any other way.
People will have to get educated. I mean, that's education is always the trick, and it's not going to come from our traditional media and news sources. We're going to have to look a little bit outside the box, and we're going to have to get smarter about other countries. I'm going to add the Shenyun information just so people kind of know some of the things we're referring to might be unfamiliar words and hard to look up for you just because of the spelling. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us and you click on the China tab at the top, I've actually pulled the Falun Gong information, Epoch Times, the link for that. They have great news, and the Shenyun information on there. It's also on the pages that we've done for the shows, but it's right there on the China tab, so you don't have to go searching all over the place.
Well, I remember June said that when she saw that performance.
Yeah, she said that was the heads up.
That was when she realized what her true national culture was all about and how she had been lied to her whole life about her culture. So very powerful performance.
And I highly suggest that the Shenyun tour, the season tour usually starts in January or so. I highly suggest you invite June back to, or myself. We can give a presentation on what Shenyun is all about.
Oh, we should do that, and then we can promote it so people can go and see that. It I missed it this last year. It was in the wrong place at the right time. I was like, oh, can't do that one. But if we plan ahead, we should definitely do that. Did mm-hmm. what was the when you came here to the United States? I'm always curious. Here we have a couple of minutes, but when you came here, did you also think that we were pretending to be free? Did you think it was fake here too?
No. I didn't even think of that. I came here as a diehard communist, just like Jim. It is true. All the information that's available to me, that I slowly opened my mind and I came to realize what CCP is. And so that is why CCP is afraid of the truth. And I said, there are the second kind of conflict only human knows how to do. That is conflict of right and wrong, truth and false. And CCP promotes falsehood and evilness. And when we are not standing up to the CCP, even though CCP is only persecuting Falun Gong, we are actually, the world, including America, have been assisting the evil force of anti-theists. Even though we, America, we believe in God, but we somehow unwittingly are assisting the force, the anti-theist force. And that is what is going to weaken America. And if we are going to stand up again, we have to change. We have to think what we're doing, what we have been doing, and reverse that course. And that's the only way to make America not just great again, but make America exceptional again.
Yeah, because honestly, we have all these trends in our country right now. You know, we have to take religion out of school. We can't have a cross anywhere. I mean, all this, you look at this corrosion of history. We've got to take down statues. We've got to do, and it's in the name of racism and all these things. But when you look at what it eventually accomplishes and what it's supporting, gosh, you know, it looks a whole lot like what you've been describing goes on in China.
And that's why I say, you know, just standing up to China in the economic front is good, but not enough. And I hope, you know, these words get to our high officials, get to President Trump to rethink what more he should include in his negotiations with China.
Yeah, he made a comment, I think it was last week, that Chinese officials had made it clear that maybe they'll just hold out until he's not in office anymore, then they can continue to deal with a more or less less strict U.S. government, which is kind of scary because that is their long game again.
Well, today's been loaded with information. We really, really appreciate everything
you
brought
so
to
much.
Us. And I really hope people
thank
will
you.
Go to the page for today, July 28th, 2019, and look at all the information that's posted on there. Thank you, Dr. Chen.
Thank you.
We will be talking to you again, I'm sure of it. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.